When we left Jesus and the disciples last week, they were crossing the Sea of Galilee to the other side. And as we noted, the other side was the Gentile side of the lake. The storm came up, as you recall, and even those folks who were used to sailing were so afraid they started accusing Jesus of not caring anything about them. When he awakens from his sleep, he stills the storm and they are amazed. But they continue to the other side. They arrive at a town called Gerasa, which is one of the 10 cities of what's called the Decapolis, which just means 10 cities. And they're Roman cities, and they're along the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee and the southeastern side of the Sea of Galilee. And they were established by the occupying army of Rome. And there were lots of Roman citizens over there, meaning lots of Gentiles. Well, the first Gentile they happen to run into is unclean in at least three different ways. First of all, he's a Gentile. By definition, unclean. Okay? Secondly, we're told he has an unclean spirit. He is possessed of an unclean spirit. Actually, he has more than one. He has 2,000 unclean spirits, but we'll get to that later. Finally, he's living among the tombs. He's living among dead bodies. A third reason for him to be unclean. So, ideally, these good Jewish folk would simply avoid him altogether. I'm sure the disciples have no idea what they're doing on that side of the lake anyway. But Jesus doesn't do that. No, this man, in his times of possession, batters himself, tries to hurt himself, is filled with self-hatred and self-loathing because of this unclean spirit or these unclean spirits that possess him. He is so strong that even when people try to chain him, he breaks the chains, and no one is able to do anything with him. But instead of seeing just a Gentile and a man possessed of unclean spirits and a man living among the tombs, Jesus sees, amazingly enough, a child of God and begins to speak, not to the man, because the man can't speak, speaks to the unclean spirit. The unclean spirit is named Legion. Don't let anybody tell you the gospel isn't political. Right here is where Mark crosses the line, stops preaching, and goes to meddling. Because Legion is not a name. It is a designation for a Roman military unit. Usually a legion refers to about 6,000 soldiers, but it also was applied in that time to a battalion of 2,000 soldiers. Becomes important later. So this demon, this unclean spirit that possesses the man is Legion. Just like the Roman legions possess the land, right? What Jesus does is to command the spirit to come out. And when he does, he happens to notice a huge number of pigs in the vicinity. Another indication we're in Gentile country, right? Huge numbers of pigs. So he drives the unclean spirits into the pigs, and the pigs go running off the cliff into the sea. That part of the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee was occupied by the 10th Roman Legion. Guess what the symbolic animal of the 10th Roman Legion was? The boar, a pig. People are hearing this on several different levels, okay? In any case, the pigs are now gone. The man is now freed. I mean, he's still unclean. He's a Gentile. He's still sitting among the tombs. But instead of leaving him there, Jesus, who sees him as a child of God, apparently, sits and talks with him. And when people approach them, when the other Gentiles approach them, they're afraid. Now, we're not told what the owner of the pigs said when he got there. that might be unprintable in the Bible. But the other people are afraid because they have seen the power of God at work, driving out a legion of unclean spirits, and their symbolic representations, the pigs, have all drowned in the sea. Well, naturally, the man wants to go with Jesus, wouldn't you? But Jesus says, no. No, you can't do that. You need to stay here, and you tell all of your friends what God has done for you. You tell all of your friends what you've experienced here. The first evangelist of the gospel was a Gentile. What is Jesus thinking? What in the world is he thinking? Well, apparently they had had enough of the Gentile side of the lake. And so, as we begin the story that you heard Nancy read, we're headed back across to the other side. The side that's more comfortable, the side where they keep kosher, the side we're used to, the Jewish side of the lake. When Jesus arrives, of course, there are crowds, and in the crowd comes a man who's a leader of the synagogue. Now, the man is asking for help. He's desperate. His young daughter is sick. You heard me tell that story. She's at the point of death, Mark says. Would Jesus come? Well, of course he would. Anyone would expect him to, because after all, this is the leader of the synagogue, right? I often, when I've worked with clergy in terms of ministry with children, which I do on a number of occasions, I always remind them, they always know the names of their largest contributors. Do they know the names of the children? We know the folks who are influential and powerful. This man is influential and powerful. He is the leader of the synagogue. So Jesus goes with the leader of the synagogue, a man named Jairus, headed toward Jairus' house to see what's going on with his daughter. On the way, we encounter a woman. Once again, unclean. This woman has had an issue of blood, as the scripture says. She has been menstruating for 12 years. And during that time, for 12 years, she has been unclean. People were to avoid her. They were not to touch her. They were not to associate with her. She had been to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor. None had done any good, but she had gone bankrupt seeking health care. That happened in the ancient world. Thank God it doesn't happen today, huh? She was without money altogether, because she had spent it all trying to be cured, and she was worse than before. So she too is desperate. In this crowd, she sees Jesus, she's heard about him, and she's convinced that she doesn't even have to touch him. After all, touching him would render him unclean too. All she has to do is touch his outer garment, and she'll be healed. So she gets as close as she can, and she reaches out as far as she can, and she touches that outer garment. And Mark says immediately she feels that healing course through her body. The only problem is Jesus feels it too. He turns to his disciples and he says, "Who touched me?" Because he felt that healing power move out of his body and into hers. He asks, "Who touched me?" And the disciples all say, "Are you crazy? We're in a crowd. Everybody's touching you." But the woman, who so desperately wanted the healing, who could have just faded into the crowd and slipped away, doesn't. In fear and trembling, it says, she knelt before Jesus and told him her story. Why in fear and trembling? Well, you know, healers expected to be paid, and she had no money. In essence, she had stolen, if you heard that middle hymn, it refers to this. She had stolen this healing power from him without asking and with no money to pay for it. Jesus could have her hauled off. She did not know what was going to happen, but she knelt in front of him, and instead of an unclean woman, Jesus saw a child of God. Not just a child of God, but did you hear what he called her? He said, daughter. Just like Jairus refers to his daughter. He said, daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace. You're healed. Well, she already knew that. He doesn't say, I have made you whole. I have healed you. He doesn't even say God has healed you. Although it's her faith in God, of course, that does it. He says, your faith, your taking this risk, your desperation and willingness to come and try absolutely anything has paid off, and you're healed, and you're not going to be charged, and you're not unclean. Instead of an unclean woman, he saw a child of God. Well, as soon as that episode is finished, they head toward the leader's house again, and people meet them from the house saying, there's no use coming, she's dead. You can send the rabbi back. You don't need Jesus anymore, she's dead. Can you imagine what went through that father's mind? If we had not stopped to talk to that woman who was unclean, then we would have made it to my house and my daughter would. Can you imagine what would be going through his head? Jesus just says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Just have faith. And when they get to the house, people have already begun the funeral exercises, the mourning, the weeping, and the wailing. And it's terribly noisy. And Jesus says, shh, quiet down. She's not dead, she's just sleeping. In Mark's telling, is it a resurrection story or is it simply a healing? Jesus seems to indicate it's a healing. She's not dead. She never has been. And in the ancient world, it was pretty hard to tell sometimes when a person was dead. Jesus is saying, you guys have it wrong. She's sleeping. He takes three of his friends, the father and the mother. He goes inside. He sticks out his hand to her and he says, little girl, get up. And she does. And the first thing he says is, we better get this girl something to eat. She's going to be hungry after all of this. He didn't see a dead child. He didn't even see a sick child. He saw a child of God. Jesus, whenever he's interrupted, takes time to look deeply enough into the heart of a Gentile with an unclean spirit living in the tombs and see a child of God. Looks at a woman who has been unclean for 12 years, who is now bankrupt, who is stealing his healing power, and sees a child of God. Looks at the leader of the synagogue in all of his prominence and sees a child of God. Looks at his daughter in her illness and sees a child of God. Because he takes time to see that. I want to finish with one more story. It's a number of years ago, and I've changed a few details of this story. You'll understand why in a minute, but the basic story is accurate. A number of years ago, had a young man who came to talk to me. He had heard me preach. He knew where I stood on certain issues. You never have to wonder where I stand on issues, do you? You don't have to agree with me, but I'll let you know. Because I feel like I need to give you the best I have to offer. There again, you don't have to agree, but here it is. So he had heard me preach on occasion. This young man had a neurological disease, and his body was twisted. He had a difficult time walking. He could not drive, so he was dependent on riding the bus to his job. He had a job. And he came to visit and started telling me this story. He said, you know, I have to depend on friends for rides to church. And then after church, they're very kind. We go to lunch. They take me to the restaurant. They take me home again. And, you know, that's all very nice. And I appreciate what they do. But there's something about me that I need to tell you that they don't know. I'm gay. And so I just listened. He said, these are Christian people, and they would never make jokes about my disability. They would never put me down because of my disability. They're compassionate folks. They genuinely are. But they don't know what I just told you. And sometimes they say really mean and hurtful things about gay people in my presence. And sometimes they make jokes about gay people in my presence. And they have no idea how hurtful that is. I wasn't sure what he wanted me to do. He said, do you know what I want? I was almost afraid to ask. What? He said, I don't want to be healed of whatever this is that has caused me and my body to be the way it is. I don't want to be changed and not be gay. I just want someone to love who will love me in return. And I knew exactly what he meant. Because you see, I have that every day. I have Margaret. And she loves me beyond my many disabilities. My many disabilities. And isn't that, after all, what marriage is? Isn't that how it gets defined? To want to love someone and have them love you in return, beyond anything that might stand in the way, beyond any superficial appearance, beyond anything of ourselves that might be considered unclean or a disability. He wanted somebody to take time to see him as a child of God. The way Jesus saw the Gentile man, the way Jesus saw the unclean woman, the way Jesus saw Jairus and Jairus' daughter. And isn't that what we all yearn for? Now, don't get me wrong. I know you don't have to be married to experience that kind of intimacy. I do understand that, but isn't that what we all yearn for? And isn't that finally what marriage is about? I don't know what happened to that young man. But I hope he found someone. And I hope today he is experiencing that same sense of being a child of God. Love beyond anything that could stand in the way we all want.